Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00061. Recorded on January 19, 2024. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Subarctic fucking wasteoid. Chapter 61.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
Coming to you live from the F-150 Mobile Studio, somewhere in the DFW Metroplex. Yeah, this here is Post-Harlan Monologics, and I am Maverick 88. And I got here, it's a cold day, and I'm out here on my break. I'm drinking coffee out of my new liquid container. It's an Arctic, R-T-I-C, Arctic. I just call it a coffee mug. It's a 30-ouncer, and that's what I do with these things. I've had one that was gifted to me from a previous supervisor on my job who, just between you and me, I didn't really like very much. And she kind of creeped me out. My wife and I, when we talk about this person, regard her as stalker number two. I had two stalkers here on the job. That was stalker number two. It's just creepy, but I was gifted by her one of these containers, right? Arctic and whatever's out there. These metal things, right? And I just needed to get rid of it. A, it was old, but B, probably, let's start that again. A, it came from her, and then B, it was old anyway. I just needed to get rid of it, so I just went online and I ordered something very similar, and that's what I'm using now. It's got to go through, apparently, like a break-in period. You got to kind of season it like you do with an iron skillet, I guess, because, yeah, whenever I start one of these things, they taste kind of tinny, you know, like the aluminum that they use. But after a while, it starts to taste like coffee, right? So this week I've been breaking this thing in, and every day it's just been this shitty coffee, you know? Nothing I could do to it, you know? When I get bad coffee and I really just need a good cup of coffee, I'll add a little regular. Like, y'all should know, I drink decaf. But I'll put a pinch of regular in if I need a little boost after a poor night's sleep, or if I just need some flavor for a decent cup of coffee. And even that didn't help. You know, I got my, I was going to say chock full of nuts, right? Chock full of nuts. That's my old New Jersey coffee that I kind of grew up with. And that is my, has been the mainstay of my coffee drinking years throughout my life since I was a teenager. And, you could get that here in Texas in this odd store and that odd store. It's not all over the place and it's not very popular, but you can only get the regular. You can't get the decaf. We end up getting cheap-ass decaf. There's not a whole lot to choose from anymore. But anyway, I don't have Chock Full of Nuts in my locker at work. What I have is the container from Chock Full of Nuts that's full up of coffee that I was gifted by another coworker here for Christmas time, right? Yeah, we got like 50, 60 people that work here. one person, and every year I get some kind of Starbucks coffee. Not my favorite. I always tell people, to me, it tastes like monkey piss. And you know, and when I first had it 30 years ago or whatever it was, 25 years ago, I liked it. It was very different, you know. And but I don't. I really don't anymore. I appreciate the gift, and I will use it, and that's what I've done. I ran out of chock full of nuts, and I just poured all that stuff into the old container. So anyway, way more than I wanted to talk about. I got an Arctic coffee mug now that I'm breaking in, right? And it's been so sour in the break-in process that even regular coffee don't improve the taste. It's just been terrible. And like I said, it's cold, right? It's cold out here. It's like 20 degrees, and maybe 25 now as the day has gotten on. Sun up and everything. But the wind is howling out of the north to 20 to 25 miles an hour, steady. This is the back end of a blue norther, right? That's what we get in Texas. We get these storms that come down from the north. They're called Arctic fronts. Go figure, because they're coming from the Arctic originally, right? They make their way down. And I don't want to be Joe Meteorologist here, but they make their way down here when we get a dip, you know, a north to south dip in the jet stream. Doesn't blow this stuff away like it ought to be doing. The dip is too far south, so all that stuff comes down here. We don't get it as bad. I mean, we had it earlier this week. We got down into the single digits, right? I think we're on our third line of Arctic blasts within the past week. Had a little bit of relief yesterday. Now another one came in last night. And this one's going to hold us through the weekend. And that may be the end of winter. We don't get it that bad. I don't mean to be pissing and moaning here about it. Because, hey, we get it better than everybody else. If it's 20 degrees out here, it's minus 20 somewhere else, right? If it's just windy and dry here, it's a freaking blizzard somewhere else. And so we get the least of it all, you know. My wife and I were talking about it last night. The biggest problem that we have is when we got to, like, drip our faucets, because our kitchen faucet runs off of pipes that are on the back wall, the outside wall of the house. We got to drip that faucet. And then maybe we get a little water bill increase as a result of it. And that's generally the winter pandemonium that we get to go through, right? Not that big a deal. Like I said, I don't mean to complain. We get so Arctic fronts have rolled in, and the temperatures are down, right? Are down. Now, Arctic is it's way up there. The Arctic Ocean, the Arctic Circle. You're talking about northern Canada, the way northern of North America, the way north of Asia and Europe. Hell, I don't even know if Europe technically reaches the Arctic Circle or not. We'll just say it does, at least by Russia and Scandinavia. I don't know. Got to get the map out, and I don't feel like getting the map out right now. But we got a person up in the Arctic Circle, or just damn near, really close to it, up on Denali, old Mount McKinley, as it used to be called once upon a time. The Mount Denali, Denali Mountains. He's in Fairbanks. He's in the military. He's in the Army, artillery guy, and very, very close. Like on the outer perimeter of the Arctic Circle, but it's always cold up there. It's Alaska. It's like central Alaska. It's cold. I checked the temperatures. It's running 15 below. That's probably actually warm for this time of year, but it's colder than the areas around it. In fact, once upon a time, right? Once upon, speaking of the Arctic Circle, once upon a time, I had an Eskimo friend, a genuine Eskimo friend, right? It's a person that I met online in a recovery, an addictions recovery online support group thing. She was an older woman, probably passed on by now. I mean, she was in her 60s when I was in my 30s. It was just an interesting thing to me to talk to somebody from a completely different culture, from a very remote part of the world, you know. She was from a place called Inuvik, Inuvik. I remember that, in the northwestern territories of Canada, right, which is a little bit east of Alaska. Right? You got a little strip of Yukon, you got Alaska, then a little strip of Yukon territory, and then you got the Northwest Territory right there next to it. And all of those are right up on the Arctic Circle. And I was doing this online kind of AA recovery stuff at one of those periods in my life, like I'm in now, long-term period in my life where I've had it up to here with AA and all the drama that comes with it. I've probably mentioned that a time or two before. And so I just back away from that. You know, I back away and get on my life. I'm clean and sober a real long time. I've normaled out to a very high degree. And, I function generally well in proper society, you know, I'm a decent citizen and all that good stuff. I don't really have a need for it outside of my need to give back. And I really do have that. And I'm contemplating that right now. But anyway, it was through this online AA thing that I met this person. And we were friendly for a season, you know, just emails and phone conversations and things like that. It wasn't a dating thing or anything like that. It was just really a curiosity to me. I get like that when it comes to variances in culture. I've said it before. I enjoy different cultures. I really do. People with all kinds of different backgrounds from different places, different histories. I just like that sort of thing, right? So there was that, you know. So the Arctic fronts and the Eskimos and Alaska, and I got cousins up in Canada too, not that far north and not that far west. One of them, they're all like in the Niagara Falls area, right? It's I guess the southwestern corner of Ontario province. It's between Lake Ontario, Lake Erie, along the, go figure, Niagara River, right? So like my aunt used to live a few blocks down from the Niagara Falls. We used to go up there every summer. I've probably mentioned this stuff before, right? And I got one this morning, and I get one through the winter every here and there, pictures of snow falling and things like that from one of my cousins, right? And of course I tell them what I always tell them: you can keep that shit up north. You know, sometimes I get fancy in Spanish and I say, you can keep that shit del norte. We don't need that here. I have no use for snow in my life anymore. My attitude towards snow developed when I lived in a place where it snowed. And it's like, if you're going to bother the snow 2-3 foot. Don't be 2-3 inches and just make a mess of things. Snow big, shut everything down. Let's enjoy life. We'll hunker down. We'll drink hot chocolate and chicken soup and make snowmen and have a thing about it, right? And that's how I feel about snow. And we don't get that much snow in Texas. We had a century snowstorm like 10 years ago where we got 8 inches one day. I mean, that was far away the greatest amount of snow that has fallen here in like more than 100 years. Or possibly in recorded meteorological Texas history. It was a big deal. 8 inches of snow. We used to get that like Monday and Wednesday and Friday up in Jersey when I was a kid growing up, you know. Three separate instances of 8 inches of snow, and it wouldn't melt. You'd end up with 20 inches on the ground by the weekend, and then it would snow again on Monday following it, you know. It seldom snowed 2-3 foot up there, but it would every couple of years or so. You know, you'd get that nor'easter come up that meets up with a Arctic blast of you know, something coming in, what they call them up there, the Alberta Clipper, right? They came from a lesser place in the far Great White North up there, Alberta, Canada, rather than up in the Alaska like we get here in Texas. But it's the same damn cold there, and you get a blizzard for it. But I don't want to get into all this weather. That's not what I'm here about, right? But I do mention my Canadian cousin, a bunch of them that I have up there. They're all, I guess, say significantly older than me, right? What are they all like? Like 10 to 20 years older than me. They're closer to being aunts and uncles in age, but they're my cousins. And I'm very fond of all of them, right? One in particular, though, and this is one I'm in touch with on a daily basis. Like, we talk. He's different. Now, I don't know if you know Canada at all. I don't know if you know Canada at all. Canadian people, they are the most polite people that you'll ever meet. And I got this cousin who I think of as like the original Canadian badass, right? This dude was not cut from the same cloth of his contemporaries, not at all, right? As badass as I am or have been in my life, I had a cousin, older cousin than me, who was more badass than me, and he had an older cousin that was more badass than him, right? And this was that guy, right? He's the oldest in the line of the black sheep in our family. We've got a strain of that. You know, most of the people in our family, and this is on my Ukrainian side, by the way, are good, fairly well off, you know. But then we've got this other element that kind of went down the wrong road and never really quite regained 100% of our capabilities and never really earned what we might have earned, maybe never have accrued what we might have accrued, right? And if I get on myself, and I may get on myself before this is over, you'll understand the opportunity I squandered with the talent that I was given, right? In the time that I lived and everything. And, well, this cousin, he's one of those. Very talented person in a lot of different facets. A winning, charming personality. Handsome. Very handsome. No, like we all are when we were younger, right? You know, we get older, we get a lot less handsome, generally speaking. This dude, he was like the Fonz of Canada, right? Totally super cool, but he was also super badass and kind of crazy. Kind of scary crazy. And most people don't know how to deal with him. And he was the black sheep there. You know, he's a black sheep of a family up there. And then we had a black sheep of a family down here. And then I was a black sheep of another family. These are, you know, my father's brother and sister, all the kids, all, you know. Like I said, on the Ukrainian side, it seemed like every family had just that one guy, you know, that wasn't quite right and was very dangerous. Quite talented, almost exceptional, but just missing, you know, as they say, six bricks shy of a full load, right? We those kinds. And this dude was like the original one. And it's funny with him because he's Canadian. He comes from a culture of polite people. He stands out in a crowd, right? My other cousin from Jersey and myself, who were the particular black sheep of our families, we didn't stand out so much because in the States, as they call it, right, the United States of America, particularly up in the New York City area, every third person's a badass, you know? And there's a lot of people packed into a small area. You don't stand out so much. But up in Canada, my God, I don't know how this guy came out the way he came out. But we looked up to him. He was the shit, you know, with a capital S. Just absolutely admired. All his younger cousins, we all looked up to this guy. And he was the funniest, most exciting, adventurous dude you ever knew, right? And he was marching to a beat of a different drummer. He was on his own different path. And well, don't you know, he bothered to look at this here podcast, right? He gave it a listen, like few people do. And he said a couple of nice things about it, but they also gave a critique. And I call it a welcome critique because I need to hear this stuff. I need to hear this stuff from people who listen. Or else I will go awry with it. You know, if I think nobody's listening, I care less and less, and the quality goes more and more south in a bad way. And amongst his critique, and probably the thing that stuck out the most, was my use of F-bombs, right? F-bombs. I cuss. I do. Multiple reasons for my use of that kind of language throughout my life. And I, you know, there's no justification for it. And no matter who you are, it's ugly. For me to listen back, like when I'm in the editing process and I hear fucking this and fucking that, and fucking, I get sick of hearing me, right? I do. And what am I doing? I don't use the adjective all those times in manners where I could actually just cut that word out. I would have to bleep it, which might be kind of funny now that I think of it, right? We just call it the Bleep Monologue, Monologics, right? Bleep Monologics podcast, where it'd be bleep, bleep, and three words, and bleep, and a word, and that's how it would go. So that might get irritating in its own way also, so I don't know about that. What I got to do is just do what I used to do when I used to, like, preach sermons, teach Bible classes. I would manage to do that for an hour or more in front of people and never drop an F-bomb. It's not that I can't do it, right? alone in the F-150 mobile studio. I'm in my comfort zone. I just say whatever the hell I want to say, right? But this ends up being what I say over and over and over and over and over again. And so I'm going to try and make a practice out of just more or less eliminating that word. And if I bring it through, it will be appropriately used, right? Very, very minimally. I can do it. I just got to be focused on doing it. And F-bombs weren't the only problem. It ain't the only word that I overuse. I got I called it overplayed words. When I listen back in my editing, I got these overplayed words. Episode to episode, it generally varies. There'll be like one word I get hung up on for some reason that I just keep on repeating and repeating as I'm trying to make my point for a second and third and fourth time. And I hear it. I'm like, it makes me cringe. Episode to episode, like I said, that word varies. But there's another word that is in every episode just about that I just use so much. And I hate to hear it. You know, now some episodes are worse than others. Some of them are just downright terrible. It seems like every sentence has the word in it. And that word is, you'd never guess it, unless it's already aggravated you to no end. The word is regard. Regard. With regards to this, with regards to that. Regard. And I do this. This is, you know, I'm looking, I'm episode 61 now, right? And I've been doing this for a little bit more than a year. And even though I just took a long break, I jammed a lot of episodes up front. These first 100 episodes are still kind of a trial and error process for me. I'm learning along the way. Regrettably, right, I don't have much of an audience, if any at all. I know my wife listens to this stuff. My wife is not likely to critique me. And she is not likely to have a problem with things that other people would have a problem with because she just loves me so much, right? But it's when I get somebody else listening to it who got the guts to say something, like my cousin. And he's very polite. He got very Canadian very quick when he was given a critique of the podcast. But I appreciate it, you know, and I find great value in it. And I take it in, I soak it in, and I move with it. It's viable. It's worthwhile. And we'll see here in this episode how much more listenable it is. Because of the one person who had the guts to stand up and say something, right? Now, I overuse that F-bomb, like I said, for multiple reasons in life. A, where I grew up, right? I mean, I learned how to drop F-bombs in the street when I was 3-4 years old. We used to play this game called Four Squares, right? You just take like a soap bar or chalk or something, you draw a box with four boxes in it on the ground, and each kid would, you know, four kids would stand in each box. And you had a little playground ball, and you would just smack it around inside the boxes. And you couldn't hit the lines, and you know whoever missed it, whatever, was out, or it was a point against, or however we scored it, I don't remember. We had great fun playing that game, right? Italian kids next door, their family, who ended up becoming the nemesis of our experience in Hillside, New Jersey, right? As it was all the way back then. But I remember those particular times fondly, but I also remember learning from, you know, the kid next door was my age, and then he had all these older siblings, and then his old father who ran a junkyard, and F-bombs would fly. And I picked that up. My father would drop one every once in a while, too. And what I'm trying to say is in New Jersey, hey, just watch The Sopranos. It's part of the culture up there. Now, you've got more dignified people that steer away from it, but generally speaking, they fly, and you just shrug your shoulders, even if you don't care for it. It is what it is. Down south, it's a different story. All across the south, and I've been there from Virginia all the way to here to Texas, it doesn't generally fly. One here, one there, okay. When you start spewing them out the way I do, or like the way that my wife's oldest son does, it's very, very frowned upon, right? It does not fly down here. But that's one reason why dropping F-bombs is so natural to me. Like, in my mind, it's not a big deal. It's just how people talk, but it's not really. It's not. It's how certain subset of people in a certain place talk. And it's ugly, even to me. Another reason is the cynicism, right? See, when I'm doing this podcast, I'm generally talking about what are considered to be, quote-unquote, things of the world, right? I'm focused on a lot of pop culture stuff. I'm focused on maybe things related to my job, right? Which I'm looking at the asshole, the ass end of society on this job that I do here, right? The Dwayne Schneider of Post Arlen, Texas, cleaning up after people's mess and fixing after things that they break. And, you know, I just see all the worst of people all day, every day, and it wears on and tears. In a couple of weeks, I'll be doing this very job in this very same facility for 8 years. That's a long time to do this. But anyway, cynicism, right? I come in to the F-150 mobile studio, right? That's the third time I've said that. So those are the words I'm abusing this week, with attitude already. And then the subject matter is subject matter that I have attitude about generally. When I talk about pop culture, when I talk about what, quote unquote, the things of the world, I do not like the world. I'm at enmity with the world. And I'm going to get into that later. Right. But see, I got this negativity, this cynicism, this attitude problem. Every time I sit my ass down in this chair and start into the monologue, I'm doing it from a bad place is what I'm trying to say. And when I'm in that bad place, that kind of language comes out. And it's very easy for me to fall into that and be comfortable with that because of my upbringing, the culture I come out of, right? That North Jersey culture. Now, the cynicism that I am given to in this year of 2024, which is a leftover from the years preceding, all the way back to 2020, the beginning of the COVID era, is not just an emotional reaction. This is not just a matter of me looking at something ugly and disgusting and nasty and disrespectful and then copying an attitude about it, right? Which in turn I'll sit down and I start to speak a monologue podcast with negativity and subsequent F-bombs. Now, it's not just this emotional reaction that I've described. There is, in this year, in this time, you know, a general, what I call, dismality, right? Dismality. That's a word because I say so. That goes in the Maverick 88 dictionary for all yous playing at home, right? Dismality. There is a general dismality in 2024 and all of these years involving the COVID and post-COVID era, right? We're on year 5 of this bullshit already. Isn't that incredible? And it's taxing. I'm not the only person that feels this dismality. I'm not the only person that has this general overbearing sense of cynicism. It's like just a dark cloud hanging over you and me and the next guy and his sister and her cousin and, you know, all. It's collective. It's a collective dismality. It's like our civilization as a whole. At least Western civilization, if you really want to be specific about it, you know. You're talking about generally half the world is like this rainy day Borg, right? This collective, this hive mind that shares in this collective grayness, this murkiness. We share confusion about what we're going through right now, and we share doubt and pessimism in the future. This is what really bothers me. I can't just make a plan, dig in, and go for it, because I don't have faith in what's to come as far as the world is concerned. The world is going to change, you know, within the next year or so. It's finally going to come to its fruition. What is it? Look, I'm just going to put it plain without getting into the politics and everything. And I mentioned this before, and I'm serious about this, right? The globalist elite dumped a big steaming shit on all of us. They shit COVID on us as an entire world population. And with that shit comes the gloom, right? And that is no different, you know, than what I experience as the Dwayne Schneider of post-Arlen, Texas, when I see somebody shit on top of the toilet bowl instead of inside of it, or shit on the floor or the wall. Yeah, that's who we are, right? And then my emotional response to that, the same thing. So it's like, I see it like this globalist elite, they shit COVID and gloom, you know? You could say the doom gloom that comes with the shit of COVID, right? But it's on us all. Just like COVID was on us all, so is the gloom. You know, and it's bigger than me, it's bigger than you. These are global elite. They go by so many names, right? The Illuminati, you know, the central bankers, the World Economic Forum, and holy shit, these people. I'll get into that in a second, right? A little bit anyway, but for us as a collective humanity, sharing in this gloom, my part in it as an individual, I can't smack myself down for falling into that gloom. It's no different than a rainy day. It's just been 4 years long and there's another year of it to come, right? You can't stop a cloud from being gray. You can't stop a gray day from being dismal. You can't stop rain on a rainy day. It's like, you know, my perspective is Texas. I talk about Texas. It's where I live. That's who I am. It's the ground that I stand on is Texas. But the sky is like Seattle, right? A place that just rains and rains and it's always cloudy and everybody's addicted to heroin. Because without heroin, they commit suicide, you know? And they have fun up there being communists, too. So it's like this communist, gloomy, gray, rainy day. Even though the skies are blue, I mean, you know, it's cold, but the skies are clear. There's not a cloud in the sky here. But it's still, you know, the gloom is on us. It sucks. Like, I'm talking about, like, the New World Order, right? This is what this dark cloud is on us. The imposition that they're putting. These people, World Economic Forum, Illuminati, New World Order, all the various things that you can call these people, they're globalist elite, for sure. Globalist elite is another way of saying these are very rich and powerful people who have ideas for social engineering, creating a dystopia, you know, a utopia in their mind, a perfect little world for those fucked up weirdos that they are. But, and there's my F-bomb, right? Negativity breeding negativity. I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. But when I talk about this, this is what gets me riled up, right? This kind of stuff here. The insane World Economic Forum, Davos, Ivory Tower, globalist, sociopath, social engineering, homosexual, pedophile, transhuman, mass murdering, leftist, commie, paranoid, dictatorial, tyrant, antichrist, weirdos. You see these people? The shit they do, they have their conferences, this weird music, these weird clothes, the weird intercourse of discussion and they're odd, right? Odd. Ivory Tower globalists. What you'd expect. They're rich, they're powerful, they want to maintain their wealth, they want to maintain their power, they're afraid of everybody else. They never want to ever have to own up for the criminality that they're involved in and the disgusting perversions, unless they would be hung on a noose. I like that, though. That was a good runoff there. Insane World Economic Forum, Davos, Ivory Tower, globalist, homosexual, pedophile, transhumanist, mass murdering, leftist, commie, paranoid, dictatorial, tyrant, antichrist, weirdos. I opened a can of alphabet soup and I just poured it in a bowl and that's what it came up. Incredible, right? I shook the magic eight ball and it came up like that. What is an antichrist, right? I use that word, antichrist. St. John, the theologian. The beloved of the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, my patron saint, is glad you asked. Let me refer you now to the Bible, 2 John chapter 1, verse 7, the King James Version. For many deceivers have entered into the world, who confess not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. And I'll do it in the New King James Version for you too, right? A little bit more modernized English. It's going to be very similar. For many deceivers have gone out into the world who do not confess Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. Oh, it's virtually verbatim the same thing. The idea is an antichrist is anybody who does not believe that Jesus Christ is who Jesus Christ says he is, right? The Messiah. Christ means Messiah. You've heard me if you've ever heard these podcasts before. Messiah is the Hebrew word. Christ is the Greek word. It means the anointed one. And what does that mean? A lot. It means a lot, all right? But it's God in the flesh, right? God amongst us, Emmanuel. Right? I think it's, I always get myself confused about this, and I shouldn't because I talk about it frequently. I think it's the Gospel of Matthew telling the story, like the Christmas story, or no, actually it's the Gospel of John, the same very John that I'm talking about, describes this newborn king and says that they will call him Emmanuel. And it looks like a name. Like you got, you know, I am relocated, actually. I'm still in the F-150 mobile studio. There's four times I mentioned that, okay? I'm just having fun with this stuff now. Normally, I sit in the parking lot at work on my breaks, and I do these monologues, right? But I decided I wanted to, well, I had to redo some of the recording I had done yesterday. So I'm relocated now in a weekend place. And I decided I would just go to the store. My wife usually does this for us on Saturday mornings. She'll run out to the store and get things for the weekend. And I said, yeah, let me go. So I got to go sit in the parking lot and do my monologue. I have to sit in the truck and do this now because I've done so many episodes. This is where I get the best recording quality. If I sit in my office and do it, I get the room reverb. I feel like I sound like I'm speaking to you out of a cave, right? And there's nothing I can do except like put a box over my head. Nah, I'm just not going to do that. So it's easy just to sit in this truck. It really works well for the recording quality, you know, most days. So anyway, here I am, and I'm talking about this Bible verse that, from St. John in his gospel, describing the baby Jesus as someone that the world would call Emmanuel, with a capital E, like a proper name. So why do I bring up where I'm sitting, where I relocated to? I'm in Dallas County in a shopping center, right? And it's a very Mexican neighborhood. It's a very Section 8 and homeless neighborhood. It's a bad place, right? It's a bad place. And it's also our local shopping center, right? It's our neighborhood. We don't live in a good neighborhood. We don't. So I'm here and I'm talking about Emmanuel as a proper name, and who walks in front of me? A little Mexican dude who looks like he could be Manuel, right? And you've heard Hispanic people call Manuel, Manny for short, you know, as a nickname. And that comes from something that means something. What does that mean? God with us. It's incredible, right? St. John is telling us that the baby king, the baby Jesus, is God with us. So when we talk about the Messiah, we talk about the Christ, right? These are titles. These are not names. Jesus from Nazareth, that's a name. Jesus Christ, that's a title. The Anointed One, what does that mean? God with us. He's Emmanuel. It's a big deal. Big deal. But anyway, talking about an Antichrist is somebody who don't believe any of that. And there's gazillions of y'all out there. Gazillions of y'all out there. It's the basic problem with the world. That's what my book that I'm working on is really all about. Religion and anti-religion. There's kind of two ways to go. And it falls right on this line here. What do you believe about Jesus? You're a Christian or you're an anti-Christian. And everything kind of evolves separately in polarity out from that foundation. Anyhow, what is an antichrist? Glad you asked. That was a mouthful, right? A mouthful. So here we are. Here I am. In this parking lot. Watching people. People watching, right? It's like the Section 8 zoo. And I don't mean to look down condescendingly on people. I ain't all that great. And I've had hard times. And I've even been crazy. I'm just telling it like it is. That's all there is to it. God bless these people. Come ask me for help. Don't come give me shit. I've got my trusty 45 right here handy, ready to go. In a little while, I'll be in that store amongst everybody. I'll be part of the zoo myself. Nonetheless, here we are, here I am, and we're all waiting for 2025 to happen. I know it, that guy knows it. You might not know it. You might be living in your ignorant bliss, completely unaware of what's going on here around you, what's been going on all this time, and what's yet to come, right? And what's yet to come is going to be the fun part of all this, because shit's going to get crazy. And who's ready for crazy, right? Who's ready for that? God, there's so many people in this country who have been long aware of what this these globalist scumbags have been up to all these years, what they're planning, what they're plotting, and what's about to come down. We've been ready for this a long time, but we have to wait for everybody else. That's the deal. There needs to be enough people cognizant of what's going on here to help to prevent it from going into dystopia. But here we are, those of us who are ready, those of us who are knowledgeable of these things. We're just marking time now. Marking time. Marking time is, in my life, United States Marine Corps terminology, but it's really just general military terminology in the Marine Corps. When I was in Paris Island, all recruits go through this. You have what's called drilling. You do drill, right? And it's not like running a hole in a wall for a screw to go into. You know, you're drilling. Is your marching, right? Marching in formation, following the instruction of your drill instructor, right? You've heard that phrase, the drill instructor. He instructs the drill. For the drill instructor, for the officers involved, it is all a way of expressing the sergeant's control over the platoon. But that's what it adds up to. So it's a matter of pride for these drill instructors. And after you're out of basic training, you hardly have any use for that at all. But there it is. It's part of making you part of a team, right? Marking time, what that is you're doing your march. Left, right, left, right. And then mark time. Instead of going forward with your left, right, you're just standing still and pumping your legs up and down and going nowhere. You're like a hamster in a cage. You're just, you know, the legs are going, but you're not advancing. Marking time, right? And that's what we're doing here. The military also talks, you know, you have that expression there, and I live this, and this sucks too. Hurry up and wait, right? That's the idea. If there's an objective, you got to quickly get to it. When you get there, you have to wait for the whole situation around you to become ready for your next course of action. Capiche? All right, that's the hurry up and wait. And that has impacted my life because I've become a hurry up and wait person. I go from point A to point B very efficiently, right? I move very efficiently, like through crowds. You've heard me talk about this before. I remember talking about the big flea market over in Canton, Texas, right? The biggest one in the state. First Monday flea market, Canton, Texas, in Van Zandt County, right? An hour and a half away from here out in the East Texas. We do enjoy going there, but sometimes it's very crowded, and sometimes the crowds are very annoying. And you know, my wife will attest to just my ability to go glide through a crowd and get somewhere. I don't malinger. I don't goof off. I don't just stop in the way like everybody. I have an objective and I go. And I don't screw around. It's how I shop, right? I'm going to have to go in a store. I know what I'm getting. And I'm going to go in there and I'm going to get it and I'm going to get the hell out. There's a couple things I'm thinking about. Like, yeah, maybe I want this, maybe I don't. Maybe I'm not sure what I want. But I'm going to go very quickly through aisles, reading the signs and deciding. And I'll be in and out of there 5 minutes. Whatever the hell I'm getting. It's how I roll. That's how I go through traffic, right? Go through traffic. The people around here seem like they don't want to get home. It's not normal to me. I grew up and learned to drive up in New Jersey. You all New Jersey people know what it's like driving up there. You're on the turnpike, bumper to bumper, going 75 miles an hour, right? And if somebody hits the brake, you all die. You all have heart attacks and crash and die. So you kind of learn to drive in unison, but you also apply that rule of stay right, pass left, and let the fast guys, people who really want to get where they're going, go. But everybody wants to get there. Everybody's pissed off. Everybody wants to go home. Not here. It seems like nobody wants to go home. It seems like everybody's home life here sucks balls, right? And it's just they don't want to go. It reminds me of a boss that I had, right? He was an Orthodox Jew. Was he Hasidic? It's just shy of Hasidic, right? He was a director of IT when I was an IT guy back in the day, doing a database programming and stuff like that, right? And a nice enough person. He had a large family, right? He had a wife at home, and they had like 8 or 9 kids, something crazy like that. This guy lived at the office. He was there at like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, and he stayed till like 11 o'clock at night. He lived down the shore, Monmouth County, Deal, New Jersey. That area has a bunch of Orthodox Jews, it's a community. Down in that area, his commute was probably no traffic late at night down the parkway. It had to be an hour and a half. It could have been like an hour and 45 minutes. And I don't know how fast he was driving, and that's what I'm talking about. People don't want to go home. They don't drive fast to get home. This guy never wanted to go home because it was just nothing but a madhouse to him. And you could tell. He wouldn't admit it, but you knew that's what it was. So if he left at 11 o'clock at night, he's getting in at like 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. And if he's leaving there to be back at work by 6 o'clock, he's leaving at 4:30. He's going home and he's just basically taking a nap, you know, turning around and going home. And he doesn't deal with nothing until the weekend. That's what I think about when I sit in traffic and wonder why these people are going 40 and a 50, right? But they all are. They all do. But not me. I'm efficient. And I glide in and out. And if I get a break, I'll go 70. I'm beyond caring anymore. I've become that super aggressive driver. But I've also got my head on a swivel. I'm very mindful. I'm not drunk doing this. I'm very attentive. But anyway, without getting locked up and all that, right? I am a hurry up and wait guy. I will be early to meet you because I respect you, right? We set a time to meet. I'll be there. I'll be there early just in case something goes wrong on the way. You know, I do my morning commute like that. I'm always 15, 20 minutes early unless I get caught behind like the freight train crossing or something like that. I guess sit there for an extra 5 or 10 minutes. I still get there early. I'm never late to the job. And I'm not late when I'm going to meet you if we set a time, right? That's respect. And if you're the opposite kind of person that's late to everything, that's disrespect. You're disrespectful. Nobody likes that. Nobody's impressed by that. Don't be so busy that you're disrespectful.
This monologue continues in the next episode, 00062. Subarctic Fucking Wasteoid, Part 2.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Stalin Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Stalin Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at poststalin.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@poststalin.com.